Let's get started. So tonight let's do HaFrashas Challah, the mitzvah of separating challah. When I was in yeshiva, I remember at one point someone telling me, I don't have no source for this, nor do I know if it's true, but that if in the middle of your regular learning, you come across a topic in the Gemara, or whatever it is that you're learning that happens to be from the parsha of that week, they used to say that was a special school, or that was a special sign from heaven that things were going well that you should be learning. I don't have no source for that. But it turns out this week is the parsha of HaFrashas Challah, parsha Shlach. You'll read in a couple of days, has this mitzvah of separating challah. So we'll learn a little bit of the psukim inside and go through the halachas. What I generally try to do is to learn the source in the psukim and to show where the halachas are coming from, where Chazal actually derived the concepts from. And so in particular in this issue of challah, all of the halachas are straight out of the psukim. We will see the drushes that Chazal make come right out of the psukim. So the Torah says it's in the middle of, I just quoted the English there in the beginning of your sheet, Abel b'nei Yisrael v'amato aleihem, v'voachem el ha'oret, asher ani mevi etzchem shama, when you come to the land that I shall bring you. So the first concept that you see is that this is a mitzvah. Many mitzvahs are incumbent upon the Jewish people always. Some are land-based. This is a mitzvah, which is when you come to the land that I will bring you, when you get to Eretz Yisrael, v'hoyo v'achalchem milechem ha'oret, when you eat of the bread of the land. Again, the Torah stresses that when you eat of the bread of the land, you will have this mitzvah to do. Tarimu truma la Hashem. You shall set aside a portion for Hashem as truma. The Torah actually describes this portion as a truma la Hashem. When you eat of the bread of the land, you'll set aside a portion. Reishis ariso sechem chalo tarimu truma. From the first of your kneading, reishis ariso sechem. We'll have this phrase many times as we learn the halachas. From the first of your kneading, reishis ariso sechem chalo tarimu truma. You shall take apart a loaf, a challah. That's where the word challah comes from. Is the Torah uses that word as the reference to what it is that you separate. As we colloquially we've switched that. Because challah was always taken from bread, that name has become popular for bread. We call bread challah. The Torah calls bread lechem, and that which you separate is called challah. That's why it's called hafrashas challah. We get confused because of the way that we speak. It almost sounds as if like you're taking hafrashas challah means from your challah that you're baking, you're taking it off. The Torah actually calls that piece that you take off, that's the reference of the challah. It shall be like the threshing floor, the portion of the threshing floor that you give to the Kohen, so shall you set it aside. Okay, those are the verses, those are the psukim. You can look them up in this week's parsha. So what comes out is as follows: to be obligated min haTorah, to have a biblical midah or rights, the requirement of hafrashas challah, there are two primary requirements. Number one, the dough must be kneaded in Eretz Yisrael. That is derived, as you see, I highlighted and underlined parts of the phrases of the psukim, the bread of the land, milechem haaretz. The Torah is clear that this is a law which requires when you knead the bread of the land, you have the mitzvah of hafrashas challah. So it only applies in Eretz Yisrael. And like many mitzvahs which apply in Eretz Yisrael, only really apply when the majority of the Jewish people are living in Eretz Yisrael. So right now, which we do not have that, we do not live in Eretz Yisrael, and even those Jews who do live in Eretz Yisrael don't yet have that biblical stature because of the fact that the majority of Jews don't live there. We're getting pretty close. I think the latest census was around 6 million Jews live in Eretz Yisrael, and we're at about 14 million worldwide, so we're moving in that direction. Slowly but surely, Mir Hashem, we will hit that number. But right now, the mitzvah of challah does not apply anywhere in the world on a daraisa level. In Eretz Yisrael, Chazal established that there's a mitzvah midrabanan to do hafrashas challah in Eretz Yisrael. Just like many of the mitzvahs that are land-based in Eretz Yisrael, even today when the mitzvah doesn't apply, we still have it on a rabbinic level. What about outside the land of Eretz Yisrael? So we have two things going against us. Number one, we're not in the right place. And number two, even in the right place, it doesn't apply today. It's only rabbinic. So nonetheless, we still have the mitzvah today in Chutz Lars, outside of Eretz Yisrael, we have it as well, but it's two steps removed from the primary mitzvah. The primary mitzvah is in Eretz Yisrael when the Jews are living in Eretz Yisrael. Today, in Eretz Yisrael, you have a rabbinic, a mitzvah d'rabbanan, to take challah, and then you have this like rabbanan mina rabbanan, like a rabbinic decree on that, which is anyway only a rabbinic decree, to continue to do it today in Chutz Lars. The reason why I stress this is that there are a number of leniencies which apply and differences between Eretz Yisrael and Chutzlars because of this fact as to why it is that we're doing this. This is not a mitzvah like Shabbos, which applies no matter where in the world that you are. This is a land-based mitzvah, which does not even apply today in Eretz Yisrael because of the fact that the majority of Jews don't live there. So we are doing it on a rabbinic level, which is on a rabbinic level in the outside the land of Eretz Yisrael. Why do we do these things outside the land of Eretz Yisrael? So that is simple. It's worth just stating, even though it is fairly obvious, that we should be familiar with all of these mitzvahs. We are preparing ourselves constantly for our return to Eretz Yisrael. And the sages enacted all these mitzvahs because you can imagine that if we would Mashiach would come, and we'd suddenly get to Eretz Yisrael, and all of a sudden we'd have a whole new Torah. We thought we were doing everything right. We were baking challah our whole life. And all of a sudden you get to Eretz Yisrael, and they start to teach you the mitzvah called challah. And I go, ah, what's challah? I've never done it. My mother didn't do challah. I never did challah. My grandmother never did challah. And she lived in Europe even. But so it would be like a whole new Torah. So the Chazal established that we should do things now that we are ready and prepared and familiar with all the mitzvahs when we get to Eretz Yisrael. So even though the mitzvah of challah does not apply in a daraisa level today in Chutz La'aretz, we do it anyway in preparation for the time when we shall mirtz Hashem get back to Eretz Yisrael. Alright, that's our basic background. Let's learn the requirements. Requirements are going to be the what, the when, the who, and the how much of Hafrashas Challah. What? How does this process actually work? Let's start with the what of Hafrashas Challah. So the pasuk, as we quoted above, says the bread of the land. It has to be Milechem Haaretz. So Lechem generally has a connotation of the five grains, which are what the Torah refers to as lechem. So it has to be one of those five primary grains: wheat, spelt, barley, oats, or rye. If you're making any dough product out of one of those five grains, then you have the mitzvah of hafrasha. So hafrasha, by the way, is the Hebrew phrase. Hafrasha means to separate, to take apart. What's that? Wow, you didn't even get there. You're taking away my thunder. Well, wait. Okay, so so bread of the land. So from what's learned out from Yilechem Haaretz, from the bread of the land, it has to learn the five primary grains. So if you cook with some of these other type of grain products that are out there, whether it be rice or whatever else is out there that you might be cooking with or baking with, none of those things you have to be concerned with. It's not an issue unless it's one of these five primary grains. Now the other issue is that even though the Torah uses the phrase Lechem Haaretz, which means the bread of the land, the poskim are clear that as you just described with such excitement, this is not a halacha of bread. It is not a concept that only when you bake bread you have to take off challah. Anytime you make a dough in arisa, the Torah uses the word mereishis arisa sechem, from the beginning of your dough you have to separate challah. So whether or not it's cake, it's crackers, it's cookies, all of those things will be chayav in challah, assuming you're making enough, which we'll get to just in a moment, which is relevant when you bake, say, for Purim or for Sheva Brachos or for whatever other occasion you might be making lots of cakes or crackers or stuff. Any dough that has the right amount of flour also has a mitzvah of taking off challah. Now, that also includes a pourable dough. If you're making a cake batter, which is pourable, you also have a mitzvah if you're making enough of it. Now again, in the baking industry, in bakeries and in the plants, this happens all the time. And they're making huge amounts. And the kashrus agencies are taking care of that. But as far as even in your own homes, if you do have enough of this batter, you would have hafrashas challah, a mitzvah on that as well. That's the what. Those are the types of products that will require a separation of challah. Now, the next question which has to be addressed then is the how much. Okay, now that every time I bake cookies, every time I make a cake, I have to take off challah. What's the requirement? So here, Chazal learned from the phrase which I have underlined on the top, or at least bolded, as the first of your kneading. Now, who is Moshe referring to when he says there's an extra word there, the you, the descriptive, not the first of the kneading, but the first of your kneading. When you knead something, when you knead the dough, that's when you need to take off challah. So Rashi quotes Chazal. Who's Moshe referring to? Who's he talking to, I should say? He's talking to the people of the desert. He's talking to the people of the Jewish people who just left Mitzrayim, and they received a certain portion of mun, a certain portion of the heavenly mun every day, and that amount was 43.2 eggs worth of mun. Based on the way the Torah describes it, and the terms translated into the form of eggs, that's how much they received every given day. So Chazal learned, it's only when you create that amount of dough out of that amount of flour that you have to take off challah. Because Moshe said, from your dough meaning the amount of food that you are generally consuming, from that amount, you would have to take off challah. Now, if this were a mathematics class, we would spend a lot of time right now going through the various opinions as to how to translate 43.2 eggs of the generation of the desert into exactly how much flour that is today. Since this is not a mathematics class, we are going to skip right past that. There are many opinions. Those who have the mindset like to do experiments and they weigh. The issue is based on the changing size of the egg, which is part of a much larger discussion, which has nothing to do with challah per se. But whenever the sages in the Gemara talk about shiurim and they use the phrase of a kazayis, the size of an olive or the size of an egg, there's great, great discussion as to whether or not that size has changed over from when the Talmud discusses the size of an egg to the size of the egg today and figuring out. That's why when it comes to Pesach, there's all this talk, how much matzah do you have to eat? It's all based on that as well. Never noticed? I'm sure you've noticed. On Pesach, we say the size for eating the matzah, for the main mitzvah of matzah, the first time you eat matzah, is larger than the amount of matzah you have to eat for either Korach or for Korech or for Afikomen. That's because the biblical requirement to eat matzah, we go with the larger amounts as we're deriving what exactly is the right amount. Since it's the biblical requirement, we try to eat the larger shear to make sure that we fulfill the obligation. Those which are only rabbinic will be more lenient. But it's all based on figuring out this vine, which affects this as well. So skipping through all the different opinions, but basically the general practice is as follows. Anything less than 3 pounds does not need to have any hafrashas challah at all. So if you're using less than 3 pounds of flour, you do not need to do hafrashas challah, which is approximately 9 to 10 cups. Interestingly, one of the things that I learned in preparing this, flours have different weights, and you can't just say it's this amount of cups, because depending on how it's packed, and depending on the temperature outside, and the humidity, and all the other factors will affect the weight of your flour, which is tied into the volume, and tied into trying to figure this out. So it's approximately 9 to 10 cups. The main thing is about the 3 pounds of flour. Anything less than that, you don't have to do it. Take off any challah at all. Once you get to 3 pounds, then we're already within the area of opinion who say that you should already be taking off challah. So at that point, we will tell you to take off challah, but not to do it with a bracha until you're using at least 5 pounds. Once you're using 5 pounds of challah, which is a flour, which is basically a whole bag of the flour, which is generally sold in 5 pound bags, so then you would actually make a bracha when you take off the challah. So between three, anything more than three, take off challah without making a bracha. After you hit 5 already, then you should already take with a bracha. Now, generally, unless you're making a lot of cookies, you're not going to hit that amount just in terms of baking cookies. That's a whole lot of cookies to use more than 3 pounds of flour. I don't mind if you do, and you have a lot of extra. I have plenty of places where you can donate them. But generally, I have asked my wife when she makes cookies, that's like way above and beyond the amount of flour generally used. But if you are making for a large party, meal, feast, whatever, we'll get to soon how and when different batches are combined. Let's say I only mix this amount at a time and I put it away in my refrigerator and I'm going to, over the course of 2 or 3 days, make all the dough and then bake it later. We'll talk about how and when that combines. But it's generally an issue. That's why we're much more familiar with it when we bake challah, because it's not so common that you actually have a requirement to take off challah and cookies because of the amount that's needed. But that is the halach as far as the how much goes. Less than 3 pounds, you're fine. More than 3 pounds, you should take off challah without a bracha. When you hit 5 pounds, then you do it with a bracha. Those numbers are pretty much there. I mean, there are a lot of numbers that are thrown out. That's the general opinion as well. If you've heard or learned something else, it's also fine there. I could find you an opinion for lots of numbers in between them. That's a generally accepted thing that I would say. So far, so good? Okay, what's the when? When do you take off the challah? When do you separate? So ideally it should be done while it's in its status of the dough before it's been baked. So it's after you've kneaded the dough already, you've added the water and all the ingredients, it's now in the form of its dough form, it's been evenly kneaded all together. Before it's been baked, that's the time that you should take off the challah. That's the general time that it should be. And from its dough, that comes straight out of the pasuk, because it says from your kneading, from your dough, from your kneading, that's when you take it off. The exception to that is the batter which can be poured. Again, this is rare in terms of when in practice where it would happen that you would have so much cake batter that you'd be taking off challah. But if you were to have such a situation, you would actually bake that first and take off the challah after it's been baked. You can't take off the challah from a liquidy batter. And as far as whether or not the dough has risen or not, doesn't make a difference. That's fine either way. As long as it's still dough, whether before it rises you take it off, or after it rises and you pound it down you take it off, that doesn't matter. It should be taken off while it's in the form of dough. Water has been added. That has to be done. You can't take off challah before the water's been added. You've kneaded it into dough, and then you take off the challah. That's the simple case. The more fun situation is section 2i. What happens if you forgot to take off challah? You were planning on doing it, whatever happened, you realize you forgot. I now have bread that's already baked on my Shabbos table, or it's Friday before Shabbos, it's coming out of my oven, and I didn't take off challah. Now what do I do? So the halacha is fine. So you can take off challah after it's been baked into bread. It's not a problem. Even though true, ideally you should have taken off while it was in its dough state, there's no problem taking off challah after it's already been baked. And that is what you would do. And if you had to make a bracha because it came from a batch that had that amount of flour used in it, then you should even take it with the bracha, even though it has been baked. Now the problem is that you can't take off challah on Shabbos or Yom Tov. The reason why I say problem is because that's if you're going to run into a situation where you forgot to take off challah, you're most likely going to realize that when it's already Shabbos or Yom Tov. You know how to take it off. And the reason for that is, based on Machzor Shabbos, of what's called being mesakein, fixing something, taking something which is unusable and making it usable. So since right now the food really shouldn't be eaten before a challah has been taken off, your taking off of the challah takes this product from being unusable and makes it usable, which is not something that you're allowed to do on Shabbos. However, this is where we started from. The requirement to take off challah in Chutz La'aretz is a rabbinic decree upon a rabbinic decree. The only biblical requirement is if you're baking bread in Eretz Yisrael. Even in Eretz Yisrael today, it doesn't apply because the majority of the Jewish people don't live there. We don't even live in Eretz Yisrael. We're in the diaspora. So we have a rabbinic mitzvah to do, which is based on the rabbinic mitzvah which is done. So we have a lot of leniencies. One of the leniencies that we have is that we're allowed to eat the challah, the bread, even though challah has not yet been taken off of it, with the following stipulation, which is we will do right now in number 2. So what you do is you eat from the challah as usual. What you're allowed to do is you leave some over. You leave over a little piece of the bread that you've baked, and then after Shabbos, you will separate challah from that piece which you left over. So that's the exception to leniency which applies outside the land of Eretz Yisrael, that you're allowed to do that. And if you have to make a bracha because you had initially baked that amount of dough as well, that amount of flour, you would even make a bracha on it. So you have your two challahs, you sit down to the table and you say, I forgot to separate challah. So if you're living in outside the land of Eretz Yisrael, so you say, no problem. Outside Eretz Yisrael, we'll eat the challah. We'll make sure to leave a little piece at the end. And then after Shabbos, we'll take from that piece and we'll separate from that remaining piece, we'll separate the challah afterwards, and that will fulfill this mitzvah, this rabbinic mitzvah of separating challah. This is only applicable outside the land of Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, where we have a real rabbinic mitzvah of challah, you know how to do it. You know how to eat from the bread until challah has been taken off of it. So if you ended up in that situation in Eretz Yisrael, which we should all get to soon, and we forget to take off challah, this wouldn't work. You couldn't eat your bread in Eretz Yisrael if you had forgotten to take off challah and it's already Shabbos Yom Tov. But in Chutz La'aretz, because of the leniency, you could do that. And I underline the word separate from the leftovers because the mitzvah is to separate challah from your dough. So what you need to do is you need to have your dough, or in this case it's already been baked into bread, and from that you have to separate them. You can't just leave over a chunk of bread and then after Shabbos say, oh, this is my challah, and then treat that as challah. There has to be a ma'isa hafrasha. There has to be an act of separation, so you have to leave a little chunk of the bread, and you separate from that, and then that becomes your challah. Yeah?
What do you do with that piece that's been separated? Because usually without a bracha, because I don't make that much, take and I put a piece of tin foil in my oven and let it burn.
Yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there. If you were flipping, I would have had that reaction even before. You would have, well, we'll get there. Okay. 3. One can be mafresh on one challah roll and exempt all of the rolls baked from that batch of dough, wherever they may be. So again, assuming you forgot to take off, right? That's where we're holding. If I have a big bowl of dough, whether it's 3 pounds or 5 pounds, I have an obligation not to take off challah with a bracha or without a bracha, and I forgot. And I baked them all into small little rolls. So now I have 30 rolls and I'm planning on serving at a Shabbos lunch or at a Shabbat brachos, wherever I'm planning on serving them. I have all these little rolls and I realize, ugh, I forgot to separate challah. But now it's not one big dough anymore that I'm taking off challah. I now have 30 separate rolls. So what do I do from that? Well, it's also fine. It all came from the same batch. You take from one of those rolls and you separate challah, and that is the fulfillment of the mitzvah for the entire batch of dough. So wherever those other rolls are, they've already been baked, they may have been sent to other people's homes for Shabbos, might be in your freezer, wherever they are, as long as from a roll from that batch you've taken off challah, that fulfills the obligation of challah on the entire roll. So that's what you do if you forgot to take off challah. Again, you take it off from the baked bread, it's not a problem. And on Shabbos or Yom Tov, you can eat it as usual, just make sure that you leave some over and separate afterwards. So far, so good. Okay, D. The who. This is one of the shilas which comes up very often, and it's got a very simple answer. Baruch Hashem. The Torah says, "Ari so seichem," from your needing. So from the fact that the Torah makes a possessive your needing, this very similar to the one we discussed, the lachas of Tzvilas Kalim, this is specifically related to a Jew's dough. It has to be needed by a Jew, or owned, really, by a Jew. At the time when the dough is needed, has to be owned by a Jew to be obligated in the mitzvah of hafrashas challah. What is this relevant to? It's relevant to when you go to Kroger and they sell you those little dough balls, which are very easy to bake. You just leave them in the little ball, you pop them in your oven, you have a little challah roll. So very often, you know, when we've hosted lunches here at the shul, so when you need to, and we're baking it ourselves to cut down on costs, so we'll go to Kroger and buy those little dough and make 30, 40, 50 of them. Baking them all at the same time. So does that ever have a obligation of challah? Eventually they come together in some way where you have a whole lot of challah rolls put together. So the law says since at the time that it was kneaded into dough, it was not Jewish owned, it was by the Kroger Corporation. So even though it's kosher, it's under supervision, but it's not owned by a Jew at the time that it was made into dough, it never will have a obligation of challah. So anytime you buy frozen dough, you are always going to not have to worry about challah. Because A, it'll either have been made under, while possessed by a non-Jew, company that's making it will be not Jewish and therefore doesn't have an obligation. And if it's a Jewish owned company, I'm assuming that since you're buying it, it has a hechsher on it. No kashrus organization would put a hechsher on challah dough if they weren't also already taking off challah. So anytime you buy frozen challah dough, you do not have to worry about the mitzvah of taking of challah for one of those two reasons, either because it was not Jewish-owned at the time, or because if it was Jewish-owned, you know, your Kinneret brand or whatever else does it, whoever's putting their hechsher on it, be it OU or whatever it is, will also be, they're responsible on putting a hechsher on it. It's one of the mitzvahs of kashrus now, that they're not going to put a stamp on it if it did not have a hechsher on it. Now, if it was owned by a Jew but needed by a non-Jew or a machine, that requires the hafrasha. It doesn't matter who's physically doing the kneading, it matters who owns it. So if you put your flour and your water and your eggs into a bread machine, you know, that doesn't absolve you from the mitzvah of challah because you didn't actually knead the dough. That's Jewish dough and would require a hafrasha, or if a Jew were to own a company or to hire somebody to help them knead the dough. All of those things would require, even though it's done by non Jews, as long as it is owned by a Jew. Moving along, the procedure, how does it actually work? Okay, so after kneading it, so now you have your dough in front of you. Ideally while standing, if you need to sit, that's also fine, but ideally it should be done while standing. You hold a kezias of dough while it is still attached. The kezias, as you'll see in the next line, is about the size of a golf ball of dough. You should hold that in your hand while it's still attached to the larger piece of the dough. You recite the bracha, which is lahafresh challah, to separate challah, and pull off the dough. That's done because of the general principle, which is in all mitzvah, almost all mitzvahs, in which we make the bracha before performing the mitzvah. So too here, you want to make the bracha before you've done the mitzvah. The mitzvah is to separate out the challah. So before actually separating it, you make the bracha. You just hold it there in its place as part of the big chunk of dough. Make the bracha and then pull it off. And then once you have it in your hand, you should declare the phrase Hare Zu Challah. This is challah. This is the separation. Now, which the Torah commands us to do. Again, for us, it's only rabbinic because we're not living in the land of Eretz Yisrael. And now you have your challah. Now, this is similar to truma. As I mentioned, the Torah describes this as harimu truma la Hashem. You shall separate a truma, a portion for Hashem. So similar to the mitzvah of separating truma, which goes to a kohen, there's no minimum requirement. Any amount of your grain which you can give as truma to a kohen. So too, technically from the Torah's perspective, the smallest amount of dough being separated would suffice. The sages instituted this concept of taking a full kazayas, which is that size of a golf ball, and that is the amount that you should take off to fulfill this mitzvah. Now again, I mentioned here, as I did earlier, the mitzvah is literally separating a piece from the larger chunk of dough, not just giving an entire challah, but you need to have from your bigger chunk of dough, and you actually separate something from that for the mitzvah of challah. Okay, now the question of what do I do with this challah? Now I separated it, I declared, Hare Zu Challah, this is my challah, what's supposed to happen to it? So let's start from the beginning. What should have happened to it if we're living in Eretz Yisrael? What are we supposed to have done with it? So it goes to a kohen. This is one of the gifts which goes to a kohen. Just like if a person has grains, they work in their field, they harvest their crops, they have a mitzvah of truma, they have a mitzvah of taking... again, from the Torah's perspective, anything, the sages instituted 1/60th, 40th, or 50th, or 60th of your grains, and you give it to a kohen, and it has a status of truma, one of the gifts which go to the kohen. So challah was part of that process. Even after you gave your grains to the kohen, when you took your own grains, and you made flour, and you kneaded your flour into dough, you then had another mitzvah of taking off a piece of your dough, and presenting it to the kohen. And it was now his dough to bake into bread. Now, the problem is today that Kohanim have a status of a tumah, of ritual impurity. They've come into contact with a dead body, or someone else has come into contact with a dead body, and generally, therefore, because of the level of tumah that a Kohen has today, he's not permitted to eat truma. So that, even though I don't have any grains, so I don't have truma to give to a Kohen, but I have challah to give to, so why can't I fulfill this mitzvah of giving it to a kohen? That's what I'm supposed to do with it. So I have a kohen next door to me, I have a kohen down the block, let me take off my dough, separate my challah, and I should go give it to him. So technically that's what you should do. You should go and give it to a kohen, and now it's his challah, and he should bake it into his bread, and he'll have some little challah rolls for himself. So the halacha is, because he's not allowed to eat it, the kohen, because the kohen has a status of being tamei, so therefore it's the challah sort of stuck. The challah, therefore, will take on the status, that same status of truma, because we who are handling the challah also are tameh. So generally what's done with tameh truma, when truma, the portion which is supposed to be given to the kohen, becomes tameh, we burn it. That's what we would have done in the times many years ago when the Beis HaMikdash stood, and that's what we continue to do today. Since I now have truma, I have in the form of challah, which is supposed to go to a kohen. Kohen can't eat it. The challah has a status of ritual impurity anyway, so we do what we normally, we burn it. There is a second reason why we burn it, which is important, which is not to inadvertently eat it, since this now has a status of truma. Now, real truma comes with with a heavenly death penalty for a non-kohen to eat it. And if a Jew has grain in Eretz Yisrael and separates truma, that truma is serious stuff. That belongs to the shevets of the kohanim, and it's off limits for a regular Jew, so much so that if he were to eat it, it comes along with a heavenly death penalty. Now, the truma that we separate today in Eretz Yisrael doesn't have that status, because it's also not a d'oraisa truma. We need to have all the Jews living in Eretz Yisrael. Similarly, with our challah, we don't, even especially in the outside the land of Eretz Yisrael, it doesn't really have the status of truma. But the sages did enact that we should separate it, so we sort of treat it with that elevated status, and therefore you're not allowed to eat it. You can't eat that challah that you separate, because it belongs to the kohen, and it has an elevated status, at least on a rabbinic level. So it's not to inadvertently eat it. The last thing that we want are to have lots of challah dough balls lying around, and a person comes and gets mixed up and comes to eat it. That's another reason why we burn it. I stress that because I said something... I remember which series it was, but a long time ago, and someone listened to it on a recording and pointed out to me. I mentioned once about saving your challah to be your chametz, and putting them in little tinfoil balls and putting them in your freezer and then burning them with the chametz. So a correction is, it's not really the ideal thing to do. You should not keep it around because of the fact that it should be burnt. And one of the reasons why we burn it is not just because it became, it is not, since a kohen can't eat it because it's tamei, but because you shouldn't come to inadvertently eat it. It should be burned right away. The reason why I had mentioned that, the reason why I had done that in my own home for many years is because someone had once, because of the next halacha, which is being careful when you cook it, that you don't make your oven, you don't mess up your oven by cooking your challah, because your challah has a status of truma. Again, it's been separated, it belongs to the kohen, it has an elevated status, albeit on a rabbinic level, but it has a level of holiness, a level of truma, kedusha, because of the fact that it's now been separated and has that status of belonging to a kohen. So you don't want it to come in direct contact with your oven. And you have to cast your whole oven, it becomes a whole, we'll talk about that in a second. So that's why I initially had been told, so don't cook it in your own oven, put it in the freezer and you burn it at your chametz. But the reality is not true, and we'll go through the appropriate way to burn it. You should burn it right away to dispose of it. Now, how do you burn it? So, you can, it should, the main thing is that it shouldn't come into contact with anything. It shouldn't come into contact with your oven, it shouldn't come into contact with the racks or with any other food that would be in the oven at the time. Which is fairly straightforward because we rarely put food on our oven directly on the racks. Anyway, there's almost always a piece of foil in your toaster or on your racks. But that is something which you must be careful with when it comes to challah. You do not need to wrap it entirely in foil. You do not need to entirely wrap it in when you burn it. In fact, it's recommended not to do so because if you do so, it will take a really long time to burn. You need to burn this challah to a crisp. It has to be entirely charred over. You wrap it up in foil, and it'll take a very long time. All you need to do is make sure that it's on a piece of foil, so that it's not in direct contact. You should not be cooking anything else in the oven at the time when you are burning up your challah. So it should be just the challah. But then it is totally fine to put it in your toaster or put it in your oven and just turn up the heat and let it burn. That is fine. It will not affect the status of your oven in any way, as long as it again remains on the foil. And that is what you're supposed to do. And then once you once it's burnt, where it's charred over, so then you can just wrap it up and throw it out. And then it no longer loses its status of challah. It becomes an inedible form of challah. That is what you should do once you separate the challah. You finish baking for the day, or if you want to, whenever you should just burn it up without, not at the same time that you're cooking other food. Clear? Questions?
I have one question that's not directed me to this, but what about Kohanim themselves, the ones responsible? Do they have to do something like this, or are they exempt from separating
columns? That is a good question. I did not come across anything.
Sorry.
I don't know. Any American Kohen here? Last coin, daughter of a coin, anyway. I'll have to look it up. My first thought is it's a gift to the coin. It might be simple, just because I don't know. It doesn't mean it's not simple. I'm not sure. You give it to a coin, so I don't know. I'm sure it's a simple answer. I don't apologize. I will look it up and I learned something new. Okay, I don't know. Fine, last thing, combining doughs. Now this one is a complicated series of halachas. I just pulled out two of the more relevant ones, which happen more often than others, and sometimes comes up. So doughs, the general principle is, or let's start with a question. So we know that there are certain requirements for hafrashas challah. If I bake less than 3 pounds of dough, then I don't have an obligation to take off challah. But if I do more than 3, I have to take off challah. If I already hit 5, then I even have to do it with a bracha. Well, let's say I bake a batch of cookies and I only use 2 pounds. So when is the end of this batch? Does this batch now end once the cookies have been baked? So now the next time I bake cookies, it's a new batch. Do they ever combine? Do they come together? What's the status with this batch of cookies or of challah. So the halacha is that they can combine, and they do combine, given certain circumstances. So the most obvious circumstance, let's start with letter B, actually, just going down to the second one, is that if they get put together, they will combine. Meaning dough combined in the same container is what we call mitzvah. If it joins together, even though the first dough was kneaded on a Monday, and then I put it in a bag in a Ziploc and I put it in my freezer or my refrigerator, and then I bake or I knead a second batch of dough on the second day, and I put that in my Ziploc, or I put that in the same container. So it doesn't matter that it was kneaded on separate occasions. The fact that they are now put in the same container will combine them into one big batch of dough. And if that big batch of dough was comprised of more than 3 pounds of flour, that will require a hafrashas challah. So in those kinds of situations, so the fact that they're now in the same container puts them together, and they will now have to, you'll have to take into account how much you have made. Now this becomes much more relevant in living in today's times with refrigeration and with freezers. You know, 200 years ago, when you made a batch of dough, you needed your dough, so you baked it. You didn't put it in the fridge for a week or a couple of days later, and you store it in a freezer where you'd keep challah. That was it. It only lasted so long before it would spoil, so it wasn't as relevant. But in today, where we often bake with less, but we put things in the refrigerator, put things in the freezer, this situation sometimes will happen, where you will end up throwing things in the same thing, and then they will combine. Now, a freezer as a whole is not considered a container. Because if you have challahs on different shelves, that doesn't have any form of combining. But in the same container in a freezer, it would. Now, I remind you here that this is not just a halacha of dough. Even after you've baked something already, if you hadn't yet taken off challah, so you still have to take it off. If I bake my challah dough into challahs, and I realize that I forgot to take off challah, so then I take off after it's been baked. So too with cookies. If you make a batch of cookies, and you have a big container, a plastic, a Tupperware container, and you bake your batch of cookies, and you put them in the Tupperware, you put them in the freezer. And then 2-3 weeks later, you make another batch of cookies, and you put that in that same big Tupperware container. That container now combines your cookies. So it could be, after 2 or 3 batches, you will have already added now cookies from over 3 pounds of flour, and in your freezer, you have now created the obligation to take off challah, and one of those cookies needs to be taken off, and you break off some of your challah from your cookie, and now that is your challah for that batch. But even in a freezer, even though they've been baked weeks or months apart, in the same container in your freezer, they would certainly combine and have an obligation to take off challah, which is something to be aware of. It happens every once in a while, especially if you're the type that likes to prepare for the future and you're always baking and putting things in the freezer. So that could happen where each individual batch of cookies never had challah, but putting them together, that might have. Yeah.
So how much you take off one cookie, 2 cookies?
Yeah, so whatever a golf ball size, but how much would a golf ball, a cookie or two would be fine, yeah.
But since they're in the bake, do you have to
put them in the oven,
tell them to burn them?
Yeah, burn them, sure. Sure. Because that has a status, that should be given to a kohen now. In other words, when you were a kohen, you would be getting cookies and challahs all the time. Every week, people would be dropping off fresh challahs and cookies at your house.
Somebody's
got to
do it.
We don't appreciate what it was like to be a kohen. A kohen worked in the Beis HaMikdash. A kohen is the one who offered up the karbanos for us. They didn't work in the field. They were sitting and learning. They were the spiritual leaders. And your job, it's like you have your eretz to do it every Shabbos, and you send the kids. Every week, you would send one of the kids over to the kohen with your fresh baked challah cookies. I made a batch of cookies. Some would go to the kohen. And it was, that's what happened. That was part of your routine on Erev Shabbos, would be to deliver your challah, assuming you made 3 pounds or more, which, every time you take a challah today, what that used to mean was, Cohen was getting a fresh loaf of bread from you. That's that word, yeah.
And how does that work if I already make cookies?
Same thing, good, same point. If you buy frozen cookie dough, same thing as the frozen challah dough. Since it was kneaded, the time that it was kneaded, it was either owned by a guy, owned by a non-Jew, or it was a Jewish-owned company, but it has a hechsher on it. The kashrus organization would have had them take off challah at the time that they did it. You don't have to worry about it. So this is only when you're making your own challah, cookies, cakes, whatever it may be. Now, the other area where this happens is I put here big bread baskets. Sometimes happens at a large meal, be it a large Shabbos lunch, catered like we have one in the shul, or you're making sheva brachos, or you're making a bris, or whatever it is that you're doing. So they have these big bread baskets sometimes, and sometimes depending on who's making the challah, sometimes different people. You know, when you're giving out tasks, and you make this, and this, so different people, so okay, well, three different people making the challah rolls, because we're making 70 or 80 challah rolls. So you have two people doing it, three people, so each one of them only made, 2 pounds of flour. But then when they come to wherever the central thing is, and everybody puts their challah in the same basket, or whatever it may be, that would combine them all, and you would have an obligation to think of. I'm not sure how often that practically happens, but it's just something to be aware of, that would come with an obligation to take of challah if they ever ended up in the same container. That combines those, whoever made them, it's all now considered one big batch.
Even if they each took?
No, if they took away, then that batch has been taken. If everybody's making small batches and putting them together, or even if one individual, say, is making all the challah, making all 80 rolls, I can't make 80 rolls in one night, so what I do is I make 3 nights, I'm going to make a couple of challah batches of challah. So I make, 2 pounds and 2 pounds and 2 pounds, and I freeze them, and then when I actually, let's say I freeze them in separate Ziplocs. So each Ziploc only has a pound and a half or 2 pounds worth of challah rolls. So that's all fine, no obligation, everything is good. But then I get to whoever it is that I'm serving them all, and I open up all my Ziplocs, and I put them all in the big basket, right then, and only then, now you have to take a challah. Because now you've just combined all your challah rolls into one container and would have an obligation to take of challah.
You have to take home and burn it.
So then you'd have to take one of the rolls, take of challah, and burn it 100%. That's correct. Again, I don't know how often this happens. I can imagine it's something to be aware of. That does happen, right?
What if it's a Jewish cater, and they might have, they made a French bread, and they made a few other things, and put everything in one big bag. Would you assume they separate?
That's the person running the kashrus on the organization should have made sure that happened. That should be their problem. This is, when you're catering your own thing, a group of women get together, they're going to do a lunch, a Shabbos lunch, or whatever they're making, a big meal for someone. And every once in a while, that's the kind of thing that's something to be aware of. More often than not, I would imagine, for these large meals, at the time that you made them, you made enough at one given time when you took a challah already. But if not, if it happens where it wasn't done that way, when they all get put in the same container, then it becomes combined, and then you have to take off challah. So it's what to be aware of with refrigeration and with freezers. It sometimes happens, and it's something to be aware of as far as those doughs combining.
Is a freezer not a container?
No, what I mean, a freezer, in other words, let's say you bake, I have in my freezer now, I have like 5 or 6 different challah rolls wrapped in tinfoil. Because every week my wife makes 3, and we end up using 2, and there's an extra one into the freezer. Well, for some rainy day, we'll have a challah. So each week, 3 challah rolls, she's not using more than 3 pounds of flour to make her 3 challah rolls. She's using 1, 1.5, whatever it is. So now I have 1 challah roll and tinfoil in my freezer. And then on top of that, I have a second challah roll wrapped in tinfoil. And the next night, I have another challah roll wrapped in tinfoil. So separate challahs, as long as they're separate, in their own foil, in a freezer, is not considered one large container that would combine them, that I have an obligation to take off challah, even though right now in my freezer, I have enough challah to combine to be more than 3 pounds in the same freezer, but that doesn't combine them, just being in the same freezer. They have to be in the same container. If I would have a bin, let's say this is my challah bin, that would then combine them. And then now they're in one of those pull-out drawers. I have all my challahs in the same bin. I would have to take a challah from those challahs. That you would. Now there are. So one of the poskim in Eretz Yisrael holds that a freezer does combine, but I have a feeling that that's because everything is more stringent in Eretz Yisrael. It's a higher level obligation in Israel. It's maybe more than more stringent on a freezer. But generally, the halacha here that I've seen is that we do not consider a freezer to be just in itself a container. You have to have them in the same Ziploc, in the same drawer, the same, some form of a container, a kli, a vessel, that's holding them together.
Can you explain 4, 2, and 3, 4, 8, 2, and 3,
and 5, and 6? I didn't even start it. I didn't mean to. No, I didn't. There's that AOC, so that's a whole separate set of lachas. Okay, anything else on this combining? Is that clear? Happens, everyone's aware. That's the halacha of that they can combine. So that's the deal. To summarize that, that is the deal with. So there never their answer to the question is when is the end? The answer is there never is an end. There is never a point in which you've baked something, be it challah, cookies, crackers, whatever, that it's now finished. You don't have to worry about it. There never is that point. It might always, as long as it's still around, come into contact or be combined in a way that would obligate it in challah. Mm-hmm. How likely, but it always would have that out there if it ever did come into contact with things. Okay, now the other area where things combine, going back to letter A, is when you have, an actual leniency as opposed to the other one, which was more of a stringency. Let's say you have, you're baking a lot of challah, so I have a couple of batches of the dough. Let's say, you're making a meal for some event, for a shul or whatever. They have a bunch of women are in the kitchen here, and they're all kneading their challah doughs. And so each woman in front of her has a pile of 5 pounds of dough. They were making a whole lot of challah, so there's one here, one there, one there. They all are obligated in challah. So the halacha is that if they're in the same vicinity, a phrase that's known as min hamukaf, you can cover challah from just one of them, and that will cover all of them. So that separate batches of challah dough in the same vicinity are also combined and considered one, so that I can take off from one, and that would cover the obligation for them all. So here's the deal with that. If they are not in separate containers, they're just all on the counter. So I have a big table or separate a couple of counters, and they're just sitting on the counter, then no. They don't have to be touching each other. They're all in front of me in the same room. I can take a challah from one, and that would cover everything. Everything has now been absolved from the obligation of having challah taken from it. If they are being held in separate containers, then they should be next to each other. The containers should actually be, they should be open and actually next to each other. I don't know where this is relevant. It's worth saying. You should be aware of it. I don't know how often, outside of a big industrial bakery that this kind of thing happens.
No, women want to come together in hello group. We have special. Everyone came with 5 pound bags. We made all our own 5 pound bags. And then there was an Israeli woman who, Charlie, she called. But she had it for bracha when we went to bracha to create something. And then we had names of cholam and singles that we
right.
said. But then she told us to put the bread, all the doughs that they should touch before she set the bread out. It could be a good thing. She said, that's something that's going to
happen. Yeah, they don't, if they were not in separate containers, they don't actually have to be touched to do that. But yeah. You do have to have it in mind, and so the Shmir Shabbos Kilkos, so one of the recent Svarim which came out in Hilchos Shabbos, points out that even if one of the batches was already baked, so like say one of the 5 pounds already been baked into challah, just taking from dough from one of the batches will even cover that obligation for that as well. That's less relevant to halacha lemaisa in terms of what comes up, but these are two things just to be aware of. Somehow the doughs can somehow combine. Those are some of the halachas as far as that goes.
Yeah. Almost all black and smoking black.
It should be entirely black. Yeah.
You know, wine wrapped up.
Can you what?
You know, wine.
Yeah. Yes. You can put like foil underneath it. Yeah. Yes, you can do that. There's an edible? I saw some of the language that it should be black and charred. I mean, I don't know if that's even... It does need to be inedible and it should be charred. I don't know. I'm not familiar enough. I haven't done it to know.
Often,
you're not being funny at all.
You risk setting off your smoke alarm.
Yeah, right. You don't
want to... Seriously? And as you see the smoke seeping out of your...
It does need to be inedible. All right, I did it. Under an hour. Okay, that's it. Next week, Mr. Shem will do Bugs and Blood.
Ooh,
Bugs and Blood.